Thank you to Dana and Ilan Rubinstein for dedicating the series, and I think it would be appropriate to dedicate learning today in memory of Pearlie, who was actually, like I said before, she was planning on being at the class today. We are in the third chapter, the third parak in Megillat Rut, and we're trying to understand what Naomi's plan was. What she was trying to have happen with Boaz. And we started last time by asking the question of why it was that they waited until now. Why didn't Naomi already, you know, try this months earlier in the beginning of the harvest season? And we gave a few different explanations. One explanation that we gave was practical. He's busy with his fields. Don't push him on something like this right now. It's too easy to say no. The approach in the Malbim, waiting after the conversion for the period of Havchana to determine that she's not pregnant and just make sure that there will be clarification on any paternity. But the main approach that we brought is that she is concerned that Boaz would say no. I stated that wrong. She's concerned because she figures, let's wait for Boaz to take the initiative rather than create embarrassment for herself. That was the Malbim word. Malbim is very careful. It's not that she thinks he's going to say no, but rather that she doesn't want to be embarrassed. So she's waiting for him to take the initiative and do this. And Boaz does not act. As Dr. Ziegler noted, we said last week, the phrase that Ruth uses saying, you know, take me under your knafayim, put me under your shelter, is the same phrase that he used in chapter 2 when he said God should take you in his shelter. So, you know, that's like a statement of, I'm not doing it. And so now when he's not acting, Naomi takes matters into her own hands, and we compared it to the cases of Lot's daughters, Ruth's ancestors, as well as Tamar, Boaz's ancestor. We also noted the possible connections to Sarah with Hagar and to Rachel and the Dudaim. But she says it's time to take matters into our own hands and move things forward. And that's why she's so secretive in setting it up, sending Ruth at night and giving her, you know, exactly what she ought to say, trying to make sure that she doesn't create an embarrassing situation in the event that Boaz declines. The last bit before we stopped last week, the last question that we were working on was the question of why not go to Ploni Almoni? You have this other fellow who is first in line. Remember, we saw the way that the Gemara breaks down the relationship. It was that Machlon, the deceased, brought the deceased husband of Ruth. His uncle was Ploni Almoni. His first cousin was Boaz. So Ploni Almoni is the more direct relative, father's brother. You should have gone to Ploni Almoni first. And we offered a few suggestions, which I wanted to now build on this time, before getting into the meat of the plan, so to speak. Yes, Susan?
I'm just troubled by, like, Lot's daughters got punished.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about them. We're not done with them.
Okay, but are we also not done with actual.
No, that's where we're getting. That's where we're going. When I say the meat of the plan, okay, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, we have to get there. But in terms of why Ruth didn't, Naomi didn't turn to Ploni Almoni first, so you could suggest it's because Boaz is identified very clearly as we go through the book in chapter 4 as an elder at the city gate. He's somebody of standing, so frankly, he's a better catch. Or it could be because now there is a connection with Boaz for Ruth through the fields, and therefore it's more likely that he will say yes. But I also wanted to note something that we didn't say last time, which is the word moda, right? If you remember back to the beginning of chapter 2, it was chapter 2, sentence 1, we were introduced to Boaz when the text said, Ula Naomi moda le'isha. Naomi had a moda to her husband. And that gets repeated in chapter 3, sentence 2, when Naomi says to Ruth, Hallo Boaz moda tanu. Boaz our moda. Now, different people here have different translations. Susan, you have the pink book. How does it translate the word moda in either of those verses?
Kinsman.
Kinsman. Okay. A relative, in other words. Anybody else have a different translation? Joyce, you usually have, I think, the JPS? You're muted.
What verse is it in?
Chapter 3, sentence 2.
And now is not the kindred. Boaz of our kindred.
Our kindred. Okay, same idea as that. Somebody here have the art scroll? Yes.
Relative.
Okay. Okay, so they're all taking it as a relative, presumably taking Moda as coming from Yud Dalid Ayin, right? Someone who knows you. So someone who knows you well is your relative. However, Malbim reads it differently. Malbim notes that Yud Dalid Ayin is often a term for intimacy. It's not only to know. It's not only to know, it's also to have a close connection. So if you take a look at source number one on the sheet, I brought you the Malbim. He writes, Bachara Yoser Shekalasa Tavi Lachma Milaket Aniyim Shezachsa Lahatara. We saw that already a while back, that Naomi chose to not to go to Boaz initially, but rather to have Ruth bring from the gleaning. Uboshah legalot lefanav machsora. She was embarrassed to divulge her lack, to divulge her neediness to Boaz. Ulaval nomar shelachen lo pantsal Boaz mipnei sheyarah sheyashiv paneha reikam. But in order to make clear that it's not that she thought Boaz would say no, right? Like I mentioned before, Malbim is adamant on this point. It tells us right off the bat, Boaz supports them with bread. Im mitzad, and here's the part that's relevant for understanding the word moda. Im mitzad shahaya moda umakir ve'ohev. Whether because he was the moda. Who is the moda? Makir, someone who knows them well. I translate it as close acquaintance. That was the best I could think of for a word in English. As well as an ohev, a friend. It's not just about being a relative. Moda connotes a level of intimacy. Bein Naomi, bein Isha, whether to Naomi or whether to her husband. Remember that as the Gemara frames it, he's not only a nephew of Elimelech, he's also a nephew of Naomi's father. Alze Omar, ulanami moda leisha. Therefore it says Naomi had a moda through her husband, and he writes in brackets, Umoda Rotzelamar Ohava Umakira Heitev. Someone who loves them, someone who knows them well. Lo Ach Rachok, not a distant brother. Vegamayan Yishpachas Elimelech, and he's from the family of Elimelech, and he goes on to say, in addition to all of these nice traits, it's also Boaz being identified as in Gibor Chayil. He continues to note something that I want to come back to. Hopefully we get to it today. That Boaz is a Gibor Chayil, which the Malbim explains in Parashas Yisra, when Moshe picks judges, and he's supposed to look for judges who are Anshei Chayil. So that means people with all the Milos. Kol Amidos, Hatavos, Ubuchlalim Hanedivus, Sinas Habatza, people who are generous, people who despise profit. And by the way, he has a good reputation. His name is Boaz. I don't want to leave that part out. So the reason, according to Malbim, for why she goes to Boaz and not Ploni Almoni is a combination of the close relationship, which is more than just being a relative, and the fact that he's identified as having wonderful qualities. Like we said, he's a Zakein. This is why she wants Boaz specifically and doesn't bother with Ploni Almoni. Okay. Items on that before we go to the core of what Naomi was planning, because that's really, you know, as Susan already asked, that's center stage in all of this. What in the world was Naomi doing? So, okay, let's get to this then. As I asked, yes.
Isn't this a contradiction? Like, he obviously believes that Boaz was a good guy. So,
yes.
He's a good guy. It still leaves us the question of why did Boaz put Ruth through all of this?
All of what?
The gleaning,
Right. his answer is going to be, and I think we said it back in chapter two, that that this is a way to preserve her dignity. Let her get it this way, as opposed to him just handing her, you know, stuff.
And he couldn't fill the position because of Plony Almoni, the position of marrying her.
Yeah, that's as we said last time. That okay. That you have to go through the family line. Yeah. But let's get to this plan here. As we asked it last time, is Naomi suggesting that Ruth seduce Boaz? Is that what Naomi is trying to set up? Especially within a remarkable comment in Rashi. Rashi's not the one I would have expected to see this in. If you look at sentence 8, chapter 3, sentence 8, right? We read through the chapter already last time, so you remember the story. She shows up in the granary, and the text says in sentence 8, it's the middle of the night, because all cool things in Tanakh happen in the middle of the night. Vayecherad ha'ish, and the man was afraid. Vayilafes, and that word vayilafes, we already noticed last time, is a very strange word. It's a very unusual word. It's a word that we noted is used when Shimshon grips the pillars, the support pillars, in the Plishti palace. It's an extremely unusual term. Well, take a look at what Rashi does with this in source number 2. He's alone in the classic commentators to do this. Most of them say that it's some form of trembling that Boaz is doing. Not Rashi. V'hi achazto, she grabbed him, she held him. L'afafto bizroaseha, she embraced him in her arms. This is not what I would have expected. Remember, in the last chapter, we noted that Naomi makes an attempt to sensitize Ruth to the fact that Boaz is saying, go with the Na'arot. Don't go with the Na'arim, right? Ruth is with the males collecting in the fields, and Boaz says to her, you should go with the Na'arot, you should go with the women, and Naomi says, you should go with the women. And now, Naomi is putting Ruth in a very different sort of position. So, I want to note a few things about this. First,
Can I just ask you?
Yeah.
For Rashi to change, like, usually he does, he's a Pashtun, so for him to go a complete roundabout means that there's something in the words that doesn't fit.
So, right, so Rashi...
That's why he's going with that.
So Rashi is not Rashi is not really leaving the literal meaning of the words. Meaning, if you look at it it would be in Shoftim chapter 16 in the story of Shimshon in that palace when he's with the pillars. It is, you know, you can read it there also as him gripping the pillars. It's Rashi's not leaving it. It's just that he has multiple options and he's choosing one that is specifically provocative. So. What we'll show first of all is that the Midrashim and the commentators here identify spiritual elements in Naomi's speech and in Boaz's conduct. Not to say that the other layer isn't there, but they add this layer to it. So as an example, look at chapter 3, sentence 3. Naomi says to Ruth, Verachatzt vasacht visamt simlosayich alayich. You should wash, you should anoint yourself with oil, you should put on your clothing, and go down to the granary. So, you know, the commentators look at that and say, well, we presume she was getting dressed, right? That didn't need to be part of the instructions. We didn't see that in the instructions when she went out to the field. So, if you look at source number 3, Talmud Yerushalmi, Verachatzt vasacht vesamt simlosayich. V'chi aruma haisa? What, was she unclothed? You needed to tell her? Ella elu bigtei shabsa. No, this was Shabbos clothing. Meaning, she was saying, get dressed up nicely. Don't go, as Ibn Ezra says, don't wear the stuff that you wear when you go gleaning. That's straightforward. But Rashi here quotes you a medrash in Rut Rabbah, in source number 4. Verachatzt, you shall bathe, mitinofes avodas kochavim shalach, to remove the filth of idolatry that had been upon you. Vasacht, you shall anoint yourself, Elu mitzvos utzedakos. That refers to mitzvos and acts of righteousness. You should go as a pure person, is the instruction that's being given in the bathing and anointing. And once again, I want to stress, this is not about removing the layer that we're reading in the text of Ruth going to him in the middle of the night and so on. It's adding a layer to what's there. It's not mutually exclusive, and I'm going to show it to you in a little bit. So hang in there. Yes, Rebecca.
It doesn't bother you. I mean, we have said that she converted at least along the road,
yes,
possibly when she married, right? I mean, they're all right.
Yes.
And yet we continue to cloak her, use the terms that, in sin, when every act she has committed has been one that is so, and the antithesis of that.
Right.
I mean, I understand you're going in a religious fashion, but still, it's just, to me, it's a little disturbing that we keep putting that on her.
No, it absolutely is disturbing. And, you know, I was bothered with it when I did the translation, which is why, if you look on the sheet, I translated it as dirt rather than tinofet is more than dirt. I was just really bothered by it for the same reason that you're bothered by it. But I think what it is emphasizing, I see you, Susan, what it is emphasizing is not that Ruth, you know, as of this day, is an idolatrous person. I don't think that's what we're saying, but what we're saying is that it's trying to emphasize you're no longer that person from back then. I think that's what it really is trying to say.
There's still a sense that it kind of sticks with, like, you didn't get rid of it. Like, it's still, whether it's in your core or somewhere, like, it's still part of you.
Well, if that's
no matter
true,
what you've
though,
done.
But if that's true, then what is she asking her to do right now?
Well, that's what I thought.
But I'm saying that's not going to remove the idolatry. Yeah, you're going the wrong way with that recommendation.
Couldn't it be that she was like going to, I took it not from the adultery point of view, because I took it like Rebecca, that she'd already converted.
Yeah.
Because you didn't have the laws that we have today, you can only go to the mikveh before you get married. They could go once a month. I actually took it that she was purifying herself, going to the mikveh, so she could touch and do what she was going to do.
That's a very interesting idea. I had not thought about it that way at all. That's a very interesting idea. See, Janine and Bruria are both.
I think many women see it that way.
Yeah.
I have to tell you.
That's very interesting. It didn't dawn on me at all. Thank you. Thank you for educating me.
What is the word used when David saw Bathsheba and they also said she was going to the mikvah? That's how.
I mean, rechitza is often used that way in Tanakh.
Yes. So
yeah, that makes sense.
We do it also, we do it at Har Sinai, like, the idea of it is not, you're correct, the word can be used that way, it just hadn't dawned on me. Har Sinai also has others, but I wanted to take this one step further and show you how this plays out further. If you take a look back in source number 4, the second part of source number 4, actually, before that, look at the text. Go to the text when Ruth goes into the granary and what Boaz is doing. Sentence 7, chapter 3, sentence 7. Vayochal Boaz, Boaz ate, vayesht, he drank, vayitav libo, and his heart was good. His heart was good. So the question is, what does that mean, his heart was good? So if you asked me, I would read it as, well, his heart was good because he ate and drank, and therefore he was in a good mood. But take a look at what the Medrash does here. It reads it not almost as though it's not his heart was good, but as though it's vayetev. He made his heart good. I translated it that way, but the truth is I should leave the translation the way it is literally in the text, which is his heart was good. What is the meaning of that? Lama vayitav libo. Shebirech al mizono, that he blessed upon his food. Not his heart was good because he had, you know, good wine with the meal. His heart was good because he made the bracha. Or alternatively, vayitav libo sha'acha mina mesika achar hamazon. It's because he had some sweets for dessert. What is that about? Shimargeles lashon laTorah, because it accustoms the heart to Torah. Meaning, if you have snacks, it helps you learn well, right? Like when we used to have the shiur at Adelina's on Thursdays pre-COVID. So you have something sweet on the table, that helps you to learn Torah. That's clearly the motivation that everybody has for taking snacks as part of this. Davar acher, alternatively, vayitav libo she'asak b'divrei Torah. No, his heart was good because he was involved in learning Torah, as the pasuk says, tov li toras picha, the Torah of your mouth is good for me, so it's good. It's tov, vayitav libo. Or alternatively, I only brought this in the Medrash for the sake of completeness of the Medrash. I didn't want to leave it out. He actually was seeking a wife, like the pasuk in Mishlei, Matzah Isha Matzah Tov. One who finds a wife finds goodness. So he actually was looking for a wife, and he had just finished on whatever website he was posting his listing, and lo and behold, in walks Ruth. However, that is to be understood, what it was that Boaz was doing.
My book translates as Barry, not Tov, not good.
I'm sorry?
My book translates Tov as M-E. R-R-Y.
Oh, his heart was Mary. I thought it was Mary, like that Medrash. Okay.
That's why I realized to change the spelling.
Right. That's interesting. I mean, Mary would certainly make it sound more like sweets and wine and whatever. But my point in bringing this for you is, not, again, and I'm just reiterating what I said before, it's not denying the other layer here. After all, the Medrash also brought us in the beginning of this, where was it? On Verachatz Vasacht in the Yerushalmi, in source number 3. It's also found in Rus Rabbah, that she's wearing nice clothing. It's not only about the spiritual layer. But what it's trying to do is to emphasize the righteousness of Ruth and Boaz in the middle of a scene that really doesn't look righteous. That's really what they're trying to do, to remind you that whatever you're thinking as you read this, keep in mind who you're talking about. That's really what it's, what I see, as a reminder that's aimed at the reader. But having read the reminder, now let's deal with the story. And the simple read, to me, is that this is, I would read it as not seduction, but as submission. Undoubtedly, you're doing this at night, alone in the granary, in secret, it lends itself to impropriety. But we've said they have other reasons to go the secret route besides impropriety. The fact that Boaz hasn't done anything yet, and there may be, not like Malbim, fear of rejection, there's also general shame, and Malbim supports that. Malbim notes the way Ruth introduces herself to Boaz. What does she call herself? Sorry? Amatecha. Right? She says it in sentence 9 twice. Anochi Rus Amasecha. Second time, Ufarasta Kinafecha al Amasecha. You should shelter your Amma, your maidservant. That's the way that Ruth presents herself to Boaz. So take a look at the way Malbim reads that in source number 5. Vatomer Anochi Rus Amasecha. Rotzelomar, what she's trying to say is this. Bal tachshov zos lepritzus im nekeva tesovev gever. Don't think of this as a breaking of boundaries if the woman goes out and looks for the man. Ki ani amasecha, because I am your maidservant. I'm not being forward. Shekmo sheyesh kesher bein ha'ama ha'ivriya uvein ha'adon shemechuyav liya'ada. There is a halacha that in the event that a woman is sold by her family into slavery, the master has a duty that he is supposed to marry her or free her. That's called yi'ud. So just like there is this requirement, the duty of the adon, kein yesh kesher beinu uveincha mitzad mitzvas yibum, we also have a connection to each other. Ruth is trying to position herself to him as somebody he owes something to, and she is in this subsidiary position. That would have been the way I would have read it. But it's not the way Dr. Ziegler reads it, for sure. Yes, Sandra.
I'm just wondering, do we know what the time frame is between when Lois writes with Victor and when this is happening?
So, from the text, we do not know. The Medrash says in chapter 1, when Naomi comes back to town with Ruth and Vatehom Kol Ha'ir, that the whole city is in an uproar, there's a Medrash that says that was when Boaz's wife had died, and that was the funeral. What that Medrash seems to be doing is solving two things. Number one, are you really trying to tell me the entire city turned out just to see Naomi? So it's saying no. And number two, I think it's trying to a certain extent to do what we do in Megillat Esther and elsewhere, which is to view God as setting everything up. So Boaz's wife is now out of the way, just as Ruth shows up in town.
So what I was thinking, if this was after the shloshim, maybe he was mourning up until this point, and now he's allowing himself to eat and drink and be happy with a view to perhaps getting married again.
That's a fascinating idea.
So Hashem made him receptive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for what happened afterwards, as you were saying, you know, putting all the cards together.
Yeah, no, it's a fascinating idea. It reminds me of Yosef, when the brothers come down and they drink with Yosef, and it says, Vayishtu Vayishkiru Imo. So Rashi quotes you the Medrash there, that that they hadn't drunk since the time that Yosef disappeared. So this is an awareness that it's time to move on, although how they're aware is a good question, and so on. But we find that there. It's an interesting thought, for sure. So, yes, Alina.
I just have a question. You talked about how she calls herself an Amma, and I was looking in Parashat, and she calls herself a Shikha. Is there a difference between Amma and Shikha? Is it a more intimate? Why is she using that phrase now when she sees him?
Right. So I don't think there is a difference between the two. We use both. As with a lot of these things, you know, you probably, if you look in Malbim, you will probably find a distinction, because Malbim does that, where others will just look at something and say, yeah, that's a synonym, because it's nicer to use two different words. It sounds better. But I'm not aware of why there should be a distinction. Yeah. I see that Susan wrote in the chat, Susan Brandes, that, isn't this a lot like Esther before she meets the king, going back to the washing and anointing and all of that? I suppose the difference I would see is just that with Ahasuerus, it's imposed. You know, it's the palace's decree, the 6 months in this and the 6 months in that and all of that. Here it's Naomi. Well, I guess you could argue it's Naomi imposing it, I suppose. It's an interesting point. We have to see. Can we find other cases like this around Tanakh and make a, make a chain of them? I don't know. So, despite the fact that the Medrash tries to remind us of who we're dealing with here, when it highlights the spirituality of Ruth and Boaz, and despite what I think is the simple read, which is this is not seduction but submission, Dr. Yael Ziegler, in an article, Naomi Tamar Ubenot Lot, Hemshechiyut Bechol Mechir, sees a very interesting additional layer here, built on those ancestors we mentioned. She notes that in the story of the daughters of Lot, and in the story of Yehuda and Tamar, and in the story here, all three cases, it starts out with a man separating from his Jewish or pre-Jewish family to go to a place of immoral conduct. Meaning, the story with Lot, of course, begins with Lot choosing to go to Sodom, right? Avram saying to Lot, you take one side, I'll take the other, and Lot says, I'm going to Sodom. The story with Yehuda and Tamar begins with Vayered Yehuda Me'es Echav. Yehuda leaves his brothers and goes to hang out with the Canaanim. And here, our story begins with Elimelech taking his family to Moab. So she suggests that Tanakh is trying to show you here a model that began in those cases. Again, leave aside the other parallels that I thought of, you know, separately, Rachel the Dudaim, or we mentioned Hagar, but Naomi is modeling what she's doing on what the daughters of Lot did and on what Tamar did. And that Naomi actually expects, Naomi is actually thinking that Ruth is going to succeed in seducing Boaz, and Boaz is the one who thwarts the plan. But that this was actually what Naomi wanted to have happen. And while I have certain doubts about the proposal here, we do have sources that redeem the daughters of Lot. Actually, before I get to that, sorry, I forgot. Take a look on the sheet at source number 6. I brought you a piece of this from Dr. Ziegler's article. Hebrews at the bottom of one side, English top of the next side. Naomi min hastam mishuchna'at. Ki ein derech yeshira yoter kedei lahasig et mevukashata. Presumably, Naomi is convinced at this point that there is no more direct route to get where she wants to go. Ba'od Boaz kibel latzmo l'sapek l'rut mazon. Boaz has already accepted he is going to feed the family. Nir'aki et ha'achayud l'bitchona shel Rut. It appears that in terms of his responsibility for Ruth's security, parentheses, da'enu nisu'im v'tze'etza'im, meaning that she should get married and she should have kids, hu motir l'ashem, that he's leaving to God, like we already mentioned the phrase of astak k'nafecha. Nir'ah ki tochnita shel Naomi mevuseset al takdimim mikra'iyim mashma'utiyim. It appears that Naomi's plan is based on meaningful biblical precedent. Yeshna mispar mikrim mashmutiyim bahem nashim noashot mishtamshot betachbulot botot v'noazot. This is good Hebrew. Amanat lahavtiach la'atzman hem sheichiyut. That there are a certain number of cases in which desperate women in Tanakh will use very blunt and bold tactics in order to guarantee themselves continuity. And that's what Naomi is trying to have Ruth do. So, as I said, I have doubts about this read, but going back to Susan's question, you do have to keep in mind that the daughters of Lot are actually redeemed, so to speak, in certain sources. I gave a shiur on this a few years ago, and I gave you a link for it in source number 10. It was a parsha shiur on the parsha where all of this happens, the daughters of Lot in Vayera. It was built around the fact that when they run away from Sodom and they go to the cave and the two women come up with their plan, the daughters of Lot come up with their plan hinges on one key item being present. What do they need in order for their plan to work?
Wine.
Wine. They have to get their father drunk. When you were fleeing from the city of Sodom, did you grab some Cabernet? Like, where in the world did you come across with wine? How did you manage this? So there's a medrash which says, there's one medrash that says the people of the region used to keep their wine in caves. They stored them in caves, keeps it cool. I think that's a party pooping medrash. I'm gonna go with source number 7, which is the second half of that medrash. Rabbi Yehuda bar Simon, nase lahem me'ein dugma shel olam haba. A model of the next world was prepared for them. Heich ma de'at amar, like the pasuk in Yoel, v'ayah bayom ahu, on that day, yitfu heharim asis. The mountains will drip syrup, meaning that Hashem made sure that they would have wine, and Rashi himself says it in source number 8. Rashi writes, yayin nizdamein lahem v'me'ara lo tzi mehen shnei umos. Wine was made available to them in the cave so that they could produce these two nations. Hashem is actually enabling the stunt that they pulled. And by the way, we find this in quite a few midrashim. It's found in the Medrash Tanchuma. It's found in the Mechilta de Rabbi Yishmael. This idea is definitely there. I should note that on a technical halachic level, as bizarre as this is going to sound, it's technically permitted for a non-Jew, according to the Gemara in Sanhedrin and Hilchos Malachim. It's just considered gross, but is technically permissible. But Rashi says that this is done to create Ammon and Moab, and then I'll note for you in source number 9, from Rabbi Eliyahu Mizrahi, the idea that he's just spelling out Rashi's point, that they intended it for the sake of heaven, and Hashem provides this for them in order to achieve that, despite their intent. But what I meant to bring here was the Nezer HaKodesh, a commentary on that same Medrash, who says it was not just meant to produce these two nations, it's meant to produce Mashiach. So whatever their intention is, this act is redeemed by various midrashim, and you can make the argument that that's Naomi's precedent. I see there are a couple of people waiting to speak. I just want to note one other thing, which people may not be aware of. I didn't bring it on the sheet because it would have required significant retyping. In the introduction to Rav Moshe Feinstein's Igros Moshe, I think it's volume 8, there's a story involving Rav Moshe Feinstein in which there was a man there was a man who mocked the daughters of Lot, asking, how in the world can Mashiach come from what they did? And they weren't embarrassed, and they publicized it with the names of their sons, and the man dies painfully of a tongue-related disease. And before he dies, they tell him in a dream that the reason why the women used the name Ammon from my nation, Moab from father, the reason why they used those names was because they were afraid that with the miracles that happened when they survived getting out of Sodom, people might think that their children were children of God. Like what would, come about in Christianity. People would assume immaculate conception. So therefore they wanted to let everybody know that that's not who this child is. This child actually came from dad. My point is not to discuss the nuances of this rather interesting story. My point is rather to just say, don't disqualify the idea that Dr. Ziegler is putting forward just because it relies on a precedent with the daughters of Lot, because there actually are sources that you can use that quasi-redeem what they did. Rebecca, you've been waiting very patiently.
It's fine. I just to give some credence to what Yael Ziegler said, and I think it bothers us, especially because of the Lot and his daughters and what Moab, you know, the root came from there. But I do think, and I might have said that, I think that what she's getting at is that there was a time, and there is a time, when unfortunately women don't have an address to take these things and feel powerless and end up using some sort of subterfuge, something, whether it be like Tamar or whatever. I mean, those are the examples that we have in our mm-hmm. books, but I think one might presume that it's happened more than once and so if you take it up, then I think Yael Ziegler has a point.
Yeah, no, I mean, when you look at it in terms of the desperation and the position they're in, I definitely can understand it. It bothers me as a reader, not just in terms of the daughters of Lot, but it bothers me because it's so out of character with the way we envision Ruth. And that's just the way we envision her. It's not, that's not her, that's us.
It's remarkable what she was willing to do for her mother-in-law to maintain the family name, the
yes.
family program. I mean, that's probably, it is quite remarkable.
Yes.
Because we're about to embark on.
Yeah.
At night.
Mm-hmm. No, it's very true.
I think it just speaks to her character, which most of us can't imagine doing.
Right. No, that's true. And that's embodied also, I see you, Ricky, hang in there, when she says, your chesed in coming, when Boaz says, your chesed in coming to me at all, even without the whole nighttime subterfuge, whatever's going on, just the fact that she's going to go marry him and not, take some field worker. Okay, Ricky, yes.
I have two things. First of all, whenever I read this,
And whenever I listen to all the people.
Yeah, hang on. I just have to mute people by default, and then you should unmute. There's background noise. Okay, Ricky, unmute and then go ahead.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. So when I'm reading Root and when I'm hearing all these deep interpretations and all these deliberations, I have to keep reminding myself that Shmuel wrote this in order to give David the glory, the chesed, the everything that came. So I'm just wondering, is this really what this is, or is this some orchestration to just put things in the very best? Because this, he's writing about another time, a couple of generations, one generation back. So all of this, is this machinations, or is this?
It's an interesting point you're raising. The thing is, if this is the best Shmuel can do to provide a positive lineage for David, I'd hate to see when he wants to make someone look bad.
How does it relate actually to what I said?
Because what I understood you to be saying is that this is, as we talked about in the beginning of our study of the book, an attempt to provide for David the aura of Ruth's chesed and her righteousness. But doing this is, if you paint it the way that Rebecca just talked about, in terms of the desperation and in terms of the chesed that comes from it, then yes, there's a positive light. I just think that you could have skipped the whole middle of the night in the granary thing and gotten to the same result. You didn't need that.
I asked myself, why did he really write that to, again, and aggrandize things? And
I think it's the story as it was. That's what I see. Okay.
My other thing is quite technical. In sentence 6 and 17, there is that gap up to Tomlin.
Yeah, we're getting there. Not this week, next week, God willing. We're going to talk about that. Yes, I want to do the Kriya Ketiv. I just wanted to deal with the story first. But
so you take it as though this happened word for word?
Yes.
And,
yep.
Okay.
That's the way I do it.
Thank you.
Sure.
I will too.
Okay. Okay, Moish, you've been waiting.
There we go. I'd like to offer something really very simple. This is based on a shiur I was listening to from a very well-known rabbi about how dating through shidduchim must be followed and how long one cannot even work without a shidduch. The reason I'm telling you that is because here is what I think might have happened. We know that nobody seems to have had a very positive relationship with Nomi. So, if the relationships at that time were shidduch based, and there's no reason to think that's not the case, she would have had no access to any marriage possibilities other than going out of the box. And this is simply a matter of Ruth going out of the box, as you mentioned before, to the rabbis who said that in certain conditions, this is what you have to do, this is what she had to do. She did nothing wrong because there was nothing else she could do.
Interesting. I mean, leaving aside, let me break it down into two different things, what you just said. In terms of your latter point that there was nothing else, that, she had no other options, I think that is what you're seeing here within the text, is going to Boaz. Bringing it down into your second point being that she didn't do anything wrong. I think we take it as a given that whatever Ruth does must be right. If Ruth did it, we're cool with it. In terms of whether she had other options and people's relationships with Naomi, I would say I'm missing too much information to be able to say that definitively. It is certainly true that you can read the beginning of the book and the women's reaction to Naomi coming back. You could read that in a negative way towards Naomi. I don't think you have to, but you could. Okay. I'm going to go further here. Janine, and was there anybody else waiting on this one? No? Okay, Janine.
I just wanted to say that I would think that she had no other option, not because of the relationship with Naomi with the town, but just because she was a Moabiyah. And at that time, till the rule was changed,
she was out of bounds for anybody.
Right. I mean, I'm going to say not changed, but remembered rather than changed. But yes, and that goes back to what to about in chapter one. Right. Naomi said, I'm not producing kids for you. Who are you going to marry? And we noted at the time that that's, you know, being a Moabiyah really is a problem on the website when you post your listing. It's absolutely true. So what I take away from this section is this. The plan waited until now because Naomi was embarrassed to approach Boaz and or was waiting for him to take the initiative. Naomi did not approach Ploni Almoni because there was no connection to work with, or because Moda signifies a closeness which transcends the blood relationship, and Boaz is this man of Chayil. And Naomi, which you have to explain still, and Naomi wants Ruth to take an aggressive approach here, possibly even to seduce Boaz like Tamar, possibly even comparable to the story with the daughters of Lot, which hopefully no one will read the same way again. So now let's take a look at Boaz's reaction. This is really something. Now, I actually want to do one thing before we read Boaz's reaction, because I only saw this in the Malbim when I started preparing, you know, this perek, and as a result, I didn't have it in the beginning of the book. Had I had it, I would have said it then. Do you remember we talked about the question of who was wrong and what they did wrong with Naomi's family, leaving Israel, abandoning their people? So one of the questions that we asked was, who was at fault when Mahlon and Kilion married Moabites, right? Was Elimelech at fault for taking the family out? Is the guilt with them? So we asked the question, is there anything wrong for Ruth? Is it inappropriate that Ruth and Arpah married Jewish men who aren't supposed to be marrying them? So I want to show you this Malbim. It was so shocking to me. Malbim is commenting on Boaz's statement when Boaz says to Ruth, first read the pasuk, sentence 10, chapter 3, sentence 10. Boaz says, Brucha at Lashem biti. You are blessed to God, my daughter. And by the way, that's his replacement for Amasecha. He's going to use BT again a little bit right after that. But he says, Heitavt chazdeich ha'acharon min harishon. Your later chesed, presumably coming to Boaz, is greater than your first chesed. Because you didn't go for a young guy, you went for marrying me, right? But what was her first chesed? So most Mefarshim read, her first chesed means taking care of Naomi. Right? And that's what I would have assumed. Knock your socks off. Take a look at source number 11 in the Malbim. HaChesed harishon she'asit im ba'aleich. The first chesed was what you did with your husband, Mahlon. Be'es shenasa osach, when he married you. She'bachart lakachas ish mizera Yisrael. You chose to marry an Israelite. That was your first chesed, Rus. It was so kind of you to marry a Jew. I don't know. Am I the only one who finds that interesting? I don't even know what to do with that. I mean, you could say it's chesed in the sense that you're living in a Moabite community. The Jews are not exactly, you know, beloved in Moab. The bad feeling went both ways. So, in that sense, maybe he's what he means it's a chesed. I don't know.
They were rich, but you have to give Orpah the same record, the same recognition.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. Orpah will get the same credit. I agree with that statement. Sorry, what, Sandra?
Can I just...
1 second, Sandra was going to make a point also.
Sorry, Sandra, I'll let you and then I'll ask.
No, so I was just
going to
say that Eglon was the king. Abimelech was very rich. So it was a good shidduch from both points of view.
Right. Could be. And there's money there, at least in the beginning.
Ruth wouldn't have had anything to say in it because it was a man's world in those days.
Mm-hmm. I hear you. Okay. Susan, you were going to say, and then Janine.
I'm a little bit still. We get this picture of Ruth, even if you take the, you know, the part where that I have in my translation, and that some of them said she held his head, but she did sleep at his feet.
Yeah.
Still not talking about the fact that she's an almanah touching a man.
You're assuming that touching his feet, that sleeping at his feet is touching him.
Okay, so we're going to assume he didn't.
Yeah, based on the text itself, as we're going to read it, you'll see.
Well, I thought
hang in there.
Felt her there.
We didn't get to the reaction yet. We'll see the reaction and then.
No, I'm talking about before the reaction, where it says
that. I mean, I put that in. Sorry. Right. No. If you're talking about in the instructions when she said lie at his feet, that is the same problem as Vayila face.
No. I'm talking about actually verse 8, right? And he says, "Who are you?"
Yeah.
Well, he either had to feel her. She was supposedly suddenly lying there. He doesn't see her go down. But how does he know she's there if he didn't?
Yeah.
See her
so down? All the Mefarshim asked that question, and their answer is either that she's touching him or that he can see her silhouette in the. In the room.
What she did, you could call it submission, but there was a seduction. She wanted him to marry her. For whatever reason, there was a goal.
Yes. There absolutely is a goal.
Get married.
Yes.
That's seduction, not submission.
Okay, so we're using the word seduction differently. What I meant with seduction was to cause something to happen that night in the granary between the two of them. That's what
like
I meant.
The actual
yes,
seduction.
Correct.
No,
that's what I meant when I used the word seduction.
Oh, because okay. Submission means you're, it's a very different word. She is going out to get him to fall for her, not necessarily to have relations that night.
So the argument is that is what she was trying to do. That's what Dr. Ziegler's point is, that she's trying to get something to happen that night in the granary, to lock things in, so to speak.
Yeah, but...
Okay, Susan, I'm going to go on to Janine, because we're running out of time.
Sorry.
Janine.
Not a forbidden relationship. She was free, he was free. The first two, Tamar was a daughter-in-law and the daughters.
They're both...
There is a big difference.
They're both mutter before Matan Torah. They're both mutter before the Torah is given. Yeah. That wouldn't be the issue. So...
Sorry, they're both what?
They're both permitted before the Torah is given. They're both permitted before the Torah is given.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. So take a look now at Boaz's reaction. We just read sentence 10, in which he blesses her and says, "Your kindness is wonderful that you didn't go to marry a younger guy." Sentence 11. Ve'ata, he says, "And now, BT, my daughter, al tiri'i, don't be afraid, kol asher tomri e'eselach, whatever you tell me to do, I'll do. Ki yodea kol sharami ki eshes chayel ot. The entire gate of my city knows that you are eshet chayel." I want to come back to the phrase eshet chayel, knowing that it's 2:23 means we're probably going to do that next week. We'll see how long it takes us to get there. Ve'ata, and now, ki omnam ki goel anochi, we skip the word im. Again, we have to come back to that next week, why we're skipping words. But, he says, "In truth, I am a goel. I am a redeemer. The gam yesh goel karov mimeni, and there's also another goel who's closer than I am. Lini halayla." So he says, "Stay here for this night." And the word lin is interesting. Dr. Ziegler says in her essay that lin is a chaste word. I'm not convinced that that's true. But she says lin by definition is a chaste, C-H-A-S-T-E, in case that's not coming through on the mic, is a chaste term. You'd have to really go around Tanakh and look carefully. Certainly in many cases it is. I don't know if it always is. But he says, "Stay here tonight. V'hayava boker im yigalech tov yigal." And in the morning, if he will redeem you, good, he will. And I've already noted the Medrash that picks up on the word good not really fitting there. It should be in yigalech yigal, and suggests that his name, Ploni Amoni's real name, is actually Tov. Okay, it's a good Jewish name. Vim lo yachpots, get it, that was a pun. Vim lo yachpots l'ga'olech, and if he does not want to redeem you, u'gealtich anochi chai Hashem, then I'll redeem you, and he swears by God. Shichvi ad haboker, stay here until the morning, and then, as it continues, v'tishkav margalosav, she lays at his feet, Susan. Adaboker, till the morning. Vatakon beterem yakir ishes re'eyu. She gets up before anybody can recognize anybody else. Vayomer, and Boaz said, Al yivada kiva'a ha'isha ha'goren. Don't let it be known that a woman came to the granary. Vayomer, and he said, last sentence, Havia mitpachas asher alayich. Bring the cloth, the kerchief that you have with you. Vechaziva, hold on to it. Vatochas ba, she held it. Vayomer sheish se'orim, and he measures out 6 barleys. We'll have to talk about what that means, but we're not going to get to that this week. Vayashes aleha vayavo ha'ir. He puts it on her, and she goes to the city. So Boaz does not act on the opportunity that he
has. Vayavo is male. Vayavo is not her.
Right. No, he came to the city. Thank you. The vayavo ha'ir is he went to the city, not that she went. Correct. So he doesn't act on the opportunity that he has. He blesses her. He tells her that he is going to pursue the geula, this redemption, whatever exactly that is. We'll watch it play out. He tells her, stay here until the morning, and he sends her away with a gift of barley. So what do we read here in Boaz's reaction? The simple read is Boaz is an immensely righteous man. He is presented with a great temptation, and he overcomes his temptation. Take a look at source number 12, where the Gemara groups Boaz with Yosef and Palti ben Laish. For those who may not remember, first of all, the Yosef story is Yosef and Potiphar's wife. She is trying to seduce him, and Yosef doesn't go for it. And then the other one is Palti ben Laish. Remember that David married Michal, daughter of Shaul. Those who are in my Thursday class, that's we've been in the thick of that story. So when Shaul's men surround the house to get David, Michal lowers David out the window, but she stays. She doesn't go with him. And she then goes off with, she's given to, a man by the name of Palti ben Laish. Until in Shmuel Bet, when David says, I'd like my wife back, thank you very much, and she comes back to him, creating all sorts of halachic problems. So the way that the Gemara resolves it is to say that nothing ever happened between Michal and Palti. And we'll have to talk about that for those in the Shmuel Shir, God willing, when we get to that part of the story. But look at what the Gemara does here. In source number 12, Tokfo shel Yosef, An v'sanu so shel Boaz. The greatest achievement of Yosef is the least achievement of Boaz. Meaning Boaz is way over Yosef. Tokfo shel Boaz. An v'sanu so shel Palti ben Laish. And Boaz's great achievement is nothing to Palti ben Laish. Because, in the hierarchy of things, the way the Gemara is viewing it, is Yosef, it's his master's wife, and it's a one-shot thing. Yeah, be a good guy in the moment. With Boaz, it's also in the moment, but she's not married to anybody else. So it takes greater willpower for him to stop here because there's no law of adultery to prevent him from doing anything. And then Palti ben Laish is even greater because Palti ben Laish is with her in the same house and all that for an extended period of time. And he doesn't do anything. So there's more to be said about the Palti ben Laish story, obviously. My point in bringing it is just to show you the way in which we look at Boaz here, and we have similar examples in other texts. Take a look at the Medrash in Rut Rabbah in source number 13. I'm doing this quickly. It's 229, where Boaz says, "Al yivada kiba isha hagoren." Boaz says, "Don't let it be known that a woman came." So the question the Medrash asks is a good one. Lemi Amar, who was he talking to? He said, don't let it be known that a woman came to the granary. So the Medrash says he's talking to God. And that the entire night, he is lying there immobilized on his face. He doesn't want to move. And he says, God, I didn't do anything. Don't let there be a desecration of your name if people find out that she was here. You find also in source number 14 another medrash that groups Boaz with Yosef and Palti ben Laish, and it talks about how he forswore his nature. There's a lot more.
But she's not married. Why would it be a desecration?
Because she's not married to him either.
I know, but she was there.
I understand, but she's not married to him.
But still desecration even?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, you have to keep in mind as well, and this goes back to the story of Yehuda and Tamar. For a man to act in a way that may be legal, strictly speaking, but has this kind of overtone to it, is still a disgrace. Yehuda and Tamar are also supposed, well, that's his own story. I'm not going to go there at 2:30 already. But the point is that he could have legally justified it, but there's no way around what it looks like. That's the problem. There's more to be said. There are more sources to bring about this, but that's the basic read. But what I want to show you to start off next week is Dr. Ziegler has a fantastic point regarding the moment in which Boaz deviates from what happened with Lot and what happened with Yehuda and Tamar. So, God willing, that will be next week.
Can I just ask you...